and welcome to another bonus Oscar episode of Highbrow Lowbrow. This is the Oscar episode for the year 2016. I'm Sean, and here I am yet again with my co-host Jesse.
Oh my god, we're back again.
This is how we do it. So, yes, like every year, I guess we're going to be doing this, I don't know, what, for the rest of our lives, right?
Yeah, well.
Or conceivable future, or until the Oscars end. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Highbrow Lowbrow is a podcast. We had a tagline. I think I still remember it. Highbrow Lowbrow. We take the Best Picture Academy Award winner versus the top box office earner to see who was right, the critics or the masses. But this episode, we aren't doing that. We are taking a look at all the Best Picture Oscar nominees to see who we think is numero uno.
And Sean, since 2010, apparently, you've been watching every single Best Picture nominee in the theaters. Well, usually in the theaters, sometimes at home, right?
Yeah.
But once again, you are prepared to discuss all 8 of the Best Picture nominees. I, myself, have seen 2 of the 8, so I'm somewhat equipped, but I'm up to speed on the reviews and the critical mass, the feeling of warmth that greets each one of these nominees. But before that, Sean, Oscar So White. Oscar So White controversy.
Yeah, Oscar So White controversy. So Jada Pinkett Smith, Will Smith's wife and grand actress, she was saying that she believes that, and then a lot of other critics believe that Oscar's so white, they don't have enough room for diversity in their film selections for Best Picture nominees and other categories as well. So there's I went above and beyond the 8 films, and I watched 4 additional films. I think, yeah, 4 additional films that play on the Oscar So White. 4 films that people believe should have been recognized or acknowledged for the Oscars.
Let's mention those now. So there's Creed, Beasts of No Nation, Chirac, and Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah.
Some of which were nominated in lesser... I know Straight Outta Compton was nominated for a screenwriting award. Yeah. But it's a white guy, apparently, who adapted it. So
yeah.
So
yeah.
That doesn't make anybody feel better. Well, except for him.
Yeah, so... And then there's also, well, there's Will Smith's film, Concussion.
Right.
But neither Jesse nor I think that film is really worthy of contention.
No.
I'm not going to watch a million movies just to try to justify.
Well, tell us about these 4 in brief so we can know. I mean,
yeah.
Many people say that there are glaring omissions here. So yeah. What's your opinion?
Beasts of No Nation, I probably would say, is the most Oscar-baity selection out of all of them, because it has that real gritty, almost like a Hurt Locker type of historical aspect vibe, and it's got this grandiose feel. I mean, it does remind me of actually The Beast of the Southern Wild, starring a kid actor who's in this sort of rugged land trying
post-apocalyptic
kind of environs, where they're trying to deal with like a cruel world and environment, trying to survive it.
Because Beasts of No Nation has a child star, right?
Yeah, Beasts of No Nation has a child star who, is in some unnamed African land or country or whatever.
Forced to become a child soldier.
Right? Forced to become a child soldier because his family's killed and, he's happened upon by a militant group. So he becomes a child soldier and he goes from... scared boy to a vicious boy. Not really, he doesn't really grow into a man,
right?
But he just sees a lot of horror and gets hardened by it.
Sure.
I thought this was a really good film. I enjoyed it. And you could watch it too on Netflix.
Well, I think, and you and I had this conversation previously, that given that the Academy voters are generally older, I think there's some statistical truth to that.
Yeah.
That a lot of them probably aren't dialed into Netflix yet. And I don't know that Netflix sends out those DVD screeners. I mean, they're probably getting into that game.
Yeah.
But still, this media landscape is changing to the point that I'll bet a lot of those people, this movie wasn't even on their radar because maybe it graced a few theaters, but it's largely a streaming experience. It's not a theatrical experience.
And so that's pretty much my ultimate assessment is that I think it is a good film, and a lot of, as with any Oscar year, there's a lot of chaff. So if this got on the list, like knocked off something like Bridge of Spies per se. I would be like, oh, okay, that's cool, you know, because it's slightly more interesting than Bridge of Spies. I mean, it is an interesting film, and you know, it deals with a gritty material, so that in that regard, but there's just a lack of visibility for it, and the idea that it's on Netflix probably put it on a way lesser pedestal.
Right. I think the biggest complaint in regard to Beasts of No Nation, I'm getting the title right,
yeah,
is that Idris Elba, the British actor, didn't receive a Best Supporting Actor nominee.
Yeah.
So, do you think he was outstanding?
I think he was pretty outstanding. I mean, he could have received one, he could have not received one. I'm not really familiar with who the Best Supporting Actors are. But I don't know. I could easily see him getting an award for that, but I don't know if it's a glaring omission. I'm not that adept at determining.
It's one of the it starts to become like a popularity contest this time.
A little bit,
but then it's problematic when it's all pale faced people. It is problematic, but
it is.
Hopefully this year will bring these protests. I guess we'd say are these people who say we're not going to attend, like Spike Lee, who's Chirac. We can talk about next.
Chirac.
Hopefully it'll bring about change in years to come. In terms of the projects that get the green light. So there are more, I think ultimately what I have to say is that there need to be more worthy quality projects with people of different skin colors to be worthy of the nomination. Because I don't know if that this is the richest year. You know, we're talking about 12 Years a Slave in years past. And I mean, that's the most recent one that comes to mind. Obviously that one is worthy of tremendous praise.
Yeah.
But are we missing those really like upper echelon, highest tier offerings with these actors? Like you and I spoke about with Concussion, oftentimes Will Smith would be one of those guys who's at the forefront.
Yeah.
But that movie wasn't received with such critical praise as I'm sure he would have liked. And so maybe he'd be in our conversation if that movie didn't get meddled with apparently by the NFL so much, saying like, no, you need to, you know, take this out and take this out. We're not allowing you to show that. It messes with our brand.
Yeah.
Anyway, but Chirac, tell me about that one.
Chirac is a film directed by Spike Lee. Some say it's a return to form. Some say it's problematic. And I would side with the latter portion of people, where it is a somewhat problematic film. The message is somewhat simplistic, and you know, essentially the idea of Chirac is that the women stop, you know, giving it up, stop having sex with the men to get them to put down their arms, you know, and it's a big calling for a black female empowerment.
Right.
But then it just goes to the source of black female empowerment by reducing it down to their libidos. And then also it just stands with a lot of preaching in it, you know. And preaching is not necessarily bad. He does that in Do the Right Thing, but I just think it's ultimately way more effective there. And the message rings a little bit more true there. With Chirac, it doesn't ring as true, and it just oversimplifies a problem that seems to be much more difficult to deal with. Right. And then it also sort of puts this onus on women to be like, well, you know, you have the power to stop these dudes from killing each other. And I just think that's like ignorant of the whole situation. It's a massively difficult and complex situation.
Deeper than that.
But
it's a storytelling manner, you know. It's a way to tell a story. I think it's a great title for a movie, Chirac. It's really good. But ultimately what I have noticed is a lot of native Chicagoans are just heaping derision upon it.
Yeah.
They think, you don't understand our city, Spike Lee, and you don't understand the issues. And to treat it so, I don't have a quote that I can throw out, but a lot of people were not impressed by the way he chose to tackle the subject matter of the unceasing violence in the urban areas of Chicago.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think, you know, it's, and then ultimately, just the biggest thing about it is that it's really ridiculous. It just gets ridiculous at times, and gets outlandish, and you know, there's weird sex dancing, like they have a sex off at the end, and I'm like, well, that's sort of weird, you know, to resolve this movie with a sex off.
Okay.
So.
All right. I don't even want to hear more about that. That just sounds bizarre.
Yeah. So it ultimately just fails as a movie.
It's uneven. And well, he's one of the guys who's saying, I'm not going to the Academy Awards this year. So, I mean, he thinks it's going to help. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
So, All right, so not much positive to say about that. So then Creed.
Creed.
It's hard to not have affection for that movie and that project. And
yeah. Now, Creed was a good, great project, but, I mean, ultimately, it feels a little bit like another just Rocky film, you know, like a little bit of different, you know, packaging.
Well, if we think about the Rocky franchise, the first one was obviously incredible and really innovated a cool character in Rocky himself, as brought back, of course, by Sly, who did get the Best Supporting Actor nod. I mean, is that the biggest slight, that he would get it above Michael B. Jordan in the Best Actor category? Or does Sly just bring this gravitas that's undeniable because of his vast experience? And
I mean, going back to the idea that it's a popularity contest, I could see it being a popularity contest and having this sort of complete arc to this Rocky character that he's portrayed all his life. So
I think that's a cool story because his breakout role is winning. Did he win Best Actor for that? I know it won Best Picture.
I
can't recall. But yeah. I know the original Rocky won Best Picture, and that's his baby, that project, because he wrote the screenplay as well.
Yeah.
So then, it's got this real, Hollywood picture-perfect ending, possibly, that he would win another prize playing the same character 35 years later or whatever.
Yeah. And then he goes through some interesting tragedies in this film that are Oscar baity, So you know, you see it, you go, oh, okay, I can see sort of, you know, how could be suckered in by this.
Sure. I'll tell you what, apart from any of this awards malarkey, when I first read about the premise for that story, I thought, this is brilliant. This is a brilliant idea to have the son of Apollo an aspiring pugilist.
Yeah.
And then, of course, go to Rocky to train him, dude. It just, warmed my heart when I read about it for the first time. I thought it was an incredible idea.
I think it's a great movie. I think it's a really solid movie. But it just doesn't have the same, bigness or grandiose. Mm. I mean, it's an evolved Rocky movie, an evolved Rocky movie at this day and age,
right,
where we are so far away from the original. And the original, it's still not the original.
Sure.
The
original. It's not like, here's what I would say to this. It's not like Rocky IV was nominated for anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's Rocky VII, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Rocky I, sure. Rocky I, to me, was such a different project from any of the subsequent ones. It just felt much more personal, much more small. And just, it delivered directly from the heart, more so. Yeah. Whereas every subsequent one has had a bit of that commerce element in everybody's back of their mind.
You know, a lot of diminishing returns, you know? I mean, I think the returns on this one are good.
Sure.
I think it's definitely excellent, but it's not, you know.
Right.
Moving on.
Okay, there's one more. Straight Outta Compton. Maybe this one caused the most furor out of all these four that we're speaking about.
Yeah, I would say Straight Outta Compton, along with Beasts of No Nation, are the two that sort of fight it out in my mind in terms of, this could have been an Oscar film. And I think this could have, I wouldn't put this as my Best Picture winner, but I could see it being among the nominees.
You liked it that much?
I do. Well, I mean, honestly, there's a lot of filler. There's a lot of films that, have this level of prestige or grandiosity that I didn't care too much about. And Straight Outta Compton offered a different level of diversity and a different way to tackle certain subjects. It said something different. It presented something different. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like the message might be not ringing true, and it may be too kind to the subject matter. So Straight Outta Compton is essentially the story of NWA, how they, bloomed into power or grew into power or grew into their rap history making group.
Sure.
With reverberations going throughout, the entirety of rap with Dr. Dre, now Snoop Dogg, now
Eazy-E. Well, Snoop Dogg wasn't part of it though.
Oh, no, they go into it.
Oh, they he's there in the background kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Like Suge Knight. So those elements, branch out from
sure.
these guys.
So I mean, Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, Eazy-E, those are the kind of the trio we remember best from that group. I just a couple things I could say about this. It's pretty much all no-name actors.
Yeah.
So that's something that's going to make voters shy away from it.
Yeah.
They might not even watch it because they don't. There's no Will Smith on the cover. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
There's not even a guy like Cuba Gooding Jr. who's maybe more of a B star, you know?
Yeah.
So that's an issue. And then I know that there's some glossing over of some of the more unsavory aspects of the group's history in terms of abuse of women, rampantly misogynistic content in their music. And so I haven't seen it, so I can't say, but these are, again, like accounts from people who are there who came out in the media after the movie was released and said, hey, that's not all the story.
Yeah. Right? Well, politically, I can see why it didn't make it because it doesn't have the name actors and it also deals with somewhat difficult subject matter, like subject matter that's a sort of a black mark on our
certainly
history.
Yeah, certainly.
Artistically, I could see why it didn't make it because it doesn't like delve into the because they almost get into a Roman hedonistic style debauchery, you know, where they're like having a lot of sex with women and a lot of girls are naked and they're just sort of living it up in that regard and doing drugs. And you never see any of the fallout of that. And I mean, you do with Eazy-E, but otherwise, like, they sort of live it up and they sort of enjoy it, which I guess goes with the message of the movie where they're trying to promote these guys as, like, you know, people that came from nothing that became something, you know, and try not to mar their legacy.
Right.
But by not acknowledging these characters as fully as they should, they lack an opportunity to, like, really discuss these guys, you know?
Right.
You know, Dr. Dre has a scary past. Eazy-E has a scary past. Ice Cube, you know, all their bad marks are just sort of loomed over to present these really sort of cool characters that, you know, revolutionized rap.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess the idea is just too much of the kid gloves being applied to it, not in the brutality, but into the character development.
Right. Well, okay, there's an in-depth discussion of that. And then, you know, a lot of people have waded in on this so-called controversy. And it's people are ready to tar and feather all kinds of people for just having an opinion on it. And it goes on and on. There were these British Film and Television Awards that just occurred a night or two ago, and a lot of people commented on it there. And it's, you know, generated a whole wave of new feelings about this.
I mean, ultimately, my big takeaway from this is that I do feel like the Academy is a little staid, and they need not necessarily diversity because of diversity to get more minorities in, but they just need diversity in the way of their thinking. They need more young people, more people of different backgrounds, so that they can nominate films that are a little bit more challenging. I you know, looking into these other films, I did feel like there was a distinct lack of creative diversity, not cultural diversity, but creative diversity.
Right.
I felt like there was too many biopics, too much of the same attacks to certain subject matter. I didn't feel like it really sort of stretched my mind or attacked my mind or made me think different about any subjects in particular. And I think that's the failing. And I think with that will come more culturally diverse films that do something different, like Tangerine. Tangerine is a good example of a film that just attacks a different way of thinking and presents you with a different worldview that I think would benefit, you know, would be like some, I don't know if it would necessarily deserve the Oscar, but, you know, if it was considered a little bit more on another level, I think that would be good. You know, just films that are different, that present different perspectives, something that brings something else to the table rather than what we are expected and used to.
Right. And just like the Black Lives Matter movement is probably due to a groundswell of decades of oppression and misbehavior from authorities, particularly police and their police brutality and whatever, this is I would argue a less consequential fight than that one. The Oscars so white hashtag campaign, etc., and where it goes on. But again, decades of this kind of building up, and so maybe it'll bring about real change. You've often voiced your opinion that the Oscar categories are quite staid and the types of movies that pander to the voters are very clear and it becomes rather tiresome.
Yeah.
You would feel that fatigue more than me because you seek out all of these Best Picture nominees and try to watch them and consider them year after year. So we'll have to wait and see in the years to come how things change. That is a very detailed discussion of our thoughts on these things, particularly Sean's, given that he did some further research on this with watching more films. Let's get actually now to the Best Picture nominees themselves this year, for better or worse. And we will start with the first four after a short break. All right, so let's take on the first four here in alphabetical order. I'm mostly going to defer to you on this first one, Sean, because I haven't seen it. It's called The Big Short, directed by Adam McKay, best known for his collaborations with Will Ferrell, normally comedic fare. They're the co-founders of the Funny or Die website. Here he decided to take on some rather serious, rather more serious subject matter, addressing in particular the market crash of 2007-2008 vintage, yep, in which the subprime mortgage loaning, blah, 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 and then bad things happen. A lot of people lost their house, and we've got some heartthrobs in this one, and I know there's some celebrity cameos to try to help it be more palatable for the everyday, the everyman and the everywoman sitting on their couch watching it,
yeah,
or in the theater watching it, to understand these, what can be rather complicated financial matters. And so I know that I heard an interview with him, I know he became obsessed with this subject matter. How did it come across for you?
Oh, I enjoyed this film. I thought it was a pretty good film, pretty good representation. It's Oscar-y. It has all those sort of, that sort of presentation to it where it presents this subject matter that's really nuanced and layered and difficult to deal with and has like a ton of moving parts. And it presents it well, presents it with a lot of verve. I might repeat this phrase often, but it's the same old stuff that I've seen before a little bit.
Even coming from him, though, who's from such a different background, I mean, this is really his first serious movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I maybe it's not my style of movie, but it's one of those political movies, and I think it falls in the same line of Spotlight a little bit, where you have these, although there is a more comedic edge to it. Essentially, Steve Carell, there's like a list of actors. Steve Carell, Christian Bale, Ryan Gosling.
Brad Pitt's in it as
Brad
well.
Brad Pitt. Right. They're all like in this world of Wall Street finance, trying to pretty much make money off of the eventual crash. They're like, well, let's capitalize on this crash while we can, you know. So they're trying to make money off of it. And then you essentially learn all about the market crash of 2007. And I think this movie is effective at that. I think that's one thing that it does really well. Shows the level of greed and corruption within our banking systems, and also gives you a lesson that you are able to understand and fully grasp what was going on and what they were trying to do and what the banks were doing, you know, how easy it is for the banks to flip it around on you and use their power to like sort of circumvent any situation, sort of beat the system. They always have the system under lock and key to make it work for them. And I think that's a lesson that people learn, but I mean, it's a lesson I'm sort of familiar with and a lesson sort of people already assumed. We already dealt with this pain a little bit. We revisit it in this film, but yeah, I mean, it says the thing that we already knew what was on the table. It says it well. And I enjoyed it for that. I enjoyed it for that. The cast of characters are fun. But ultimately it's the message that sort of dictates the film's power.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes when I think about this one, it seems rather self-congratulatory. Like, well, all these supposedly wise financial minds or watchdogs couldn't figure this out, but we understand now what happened.
Yeah.
And let's have some actors tell you all about it. You know?
Yeah.
So, obviously, that would be a tremendous shock if that won the top prize here, wouldn't it?
I think it probably would, yeah. It probably I think would. It, there's top runners currently.
Okay. Well, I think it would also be shocking if the next one won, just given the prestige of Steven Spielberg's projects over the years. And his main star, Tom Hanks, they team up again for Bridge of Spies, a Cold War era espionage thriller in which Tom Hanks... I've kind of avoided learning about this one because I know I'd like to watch it.
Yeah.
But, you know, a tete-a-tete featuring the United States against Russia. Yeah. There are spies involved. Tom Hanks wears a hat and a suit. It's very gray. Sean, your turn.
So essentially, Bridge of Spies is about... I sort of like they were fighting to get this soldier acquitted. Tom Hanks is a lawyer of business or a lawyer of something else, and then they bring him to be a negotiator to get this other soldier. So the story is like, you know, this fish out of water in government, trying to make government, you know, trying to figure out government and having his expertise beat out the government or whatever. Mm. And so they're trying to get this guy to come over and save him. And so this first half of the movie goes into that detail where they're trying to save this soldier and prove he's not guilty or something, or prove he's innocent. And then I feel like the movie sort of derailed from there because then they became a rescue mission for another soldier. So we have one spy, we're trying to prove he's not guilty, and they have another spy, and we want to trade our spy for that spy. But the first part of the film is just trying to prove this spy is not guilty. So I'm like invested in that. And then they're like, well, let's change it to like an exchange mission. And I'm like, well, I put all this emotion into this, like trying to prove this dude's like, you know, not guilty. And now you're changing the game on me. And I'm like, I wasn't a fan of that. I liked the nuance, essentially a Russian spy. He's not a Russian spy. We don't know if he is or he isn't. They're trying to justify his innocence and, you know, and this guy who's American is trying to justify his innocence, even though he's Russian and he should immediately condemn him because that's how society was. I like that perspective, sort of like that one film where the guy was presumed as a Jewish guy. Gentleman's Agreement. Gentleman's Agreement.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, where you're like, well, I'm going to defend this, you know, looked down on minority because it's the right thing. And I like that sort of tale. I think that's a cool tale. But then after that, after they sort of gotten over that hump, they sort of dealt with that. And then they had to save this other guy in Russia. It was just like, whatever.
Got too convoluted.
Yeah, got too convoluted. I just stopped, you know, investing in it. Mm. And then it sort of follows the same tropes of big, grandiose Oscar films where, like, this is important because we're fighting for freedom and we're fighting for who we are as a people, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like... I know, I get it. You know, I believe that too, sure.
Right, okay. I know, I get it. I believe that, sure. All right, there's some parting remarks on Bridge of Spies from Sean. Next up is Brooklyn. The screenplay is written by Nick Hornby, who's an author I like very much, probably best known for High Fidelity, for originally writing that book. And he also wrote Fever Pitch, which anybody who's a British soccer fan knows about. So Brooklyn is the tale of a young woman who emigrates from Ireland to become a fish out of water in Brooklyn with her new husband, right?
Yeah.
Who is he, American or?
Yeah, he's like an Italian guy.
Okay, Italian. Yeah. Okay. And just a coming of age story, basically.
Yeah, coming of age story. It's pretty much like a simple, sort of sweet love story. Mm-hmm. And I think it's executed well. I mean, but not to any level where it's challenging. I mean, I think there's no supremely difficult conflicts. I mean, when she first initially gets to America, she has a fish out of water tale that she has to deal with all these big aspects of like life, like making it out on your own, making enough money, trying to understand a different culture than yours,
becoming a woman.
Yeah. But then ultimately it sort of plays kid gloves throughout the film. There's nothing, I mean, there's like tragedies in her life, but they're more simple, more familiar tragedies, which is fine. I think that's okay, and I think stories can be told like that, but it doesn't tell it in a new and unique way. It's sort of like tried and true, classic, you know, coming of age, love story style stuff.
I think it's getting a lot of praise for how well it depicts that era of and that that theme of immigration to the United States, which a lot of people have a lot of romance and affection for. You know, viewers nowadays think, oh, that was my great-grandmother or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think it's getting a lot of praise, at least from my perspective, not having seen it, for how well the costuming is done, how well the scenery is depicted to make it look like, what is it, 1910s?
Yeah.
Brooklyn,
yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Which obviously takes a lot of effort.
Yeah, no, no. I think it does do that well.
Right.
I do think it executes that well, but I don't think it pulls or pushes us in any different directions, like thematically or story-wise. I don't think it breaks any new ground. You could compare it, for example, to The Artist, right? The Artist harkens those feelings of nostalgia and warm feelings, and you're like, well, this is the same thing, but it's not, because what The Artist does is it artfully integrates elements of the talkie move of the silent movies with the talkie movies, you know, bridging that gap, creating this level of artistry in depicting what silent films meant, what silent films are, what it really brings back the nostalgia in its filmmaking structure. You know, it's not just creating this old story, making it new. It's taking the old story and melding it with the new.
Right.
And I think that's why it's so effective.
People in 50 years are going to look back at The Artist as a best picture winner as one of the most bizarre occurrences ever. But when you really evaluate the films that came out that year, that was cream of the crop. I think we both agreed on that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move forward. This one kind of turns these three on its head. Mad Max Fury Road. And I actually watched this one. And this is an incredible action movie, dude. I thought this was just blew my mind, some of the things that he was able to pull off in this one. George Miller, is that the director's name?
Yeah, George Miller. He's the director of Mad Max.
The whole, what is it, a quadrology? Is this the fourth?
Yeah, the fourth.
Okay, I think I've maybe only seen the first one, and it was a long time ago, so I don't have a good memory of it. But this one blew my mind. I don't know how much he was building upon the worlds of the past films, but I felt like you could enter this one and really just... Oh my goodness, dude! The opening 10 minutes were just exhilarating.
Yeah,
and I thought to myself, I'm in the hands of a master right now.
Yeah,
this guy knows this world. He knows what he wants to depict. He knows all the characters. He knows what the objectives are. Then there's obviously, you could look at it on a deeper level of, is this where our world is headed?
Yeah,
that kind of thing, right? But anyway, as you can tell, I'm pretty enthusiastic about this one. I thought it was amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just to give a quick idea of what Mad Max is about.
Sure.
Imperial Furiosa is a lieutenant under the Mad War General. I forget what his name is. Morton Joe. She's one of his generals who rebels to try and save Morton Joe's wives from Morton Joe's sort of cruel, ironclad grip over the society that, like, you know, he rules over this small, in this post-apocalyptic world, he rules over this small part of land where the water is scarce, and he controls the water, he controls everything, and as a result, he dominates, you know, that society and has these wives and has all these boys underneath him, and, you know, so he's just, like, the ruler of the world, and this empowered general just decides to say, screw you, let's get out of here and, you know, make our own way. And then she gets the help of Mad Max, who's along the way.
Yeah, he's just a road warrior.
Trying to help out. And I think that's been the general story.
He
comes across some sort of, endangered group, some group that's facing danger at both sides. And he, you know, tries to help in his own way, in his own sort of flailing way.
Right.
And yes, I totally agree. This film I'm just going to say it straight off. This is my pick. I don't think this will win. This pretty much has no chance of winning, but I think it should definitively win.
The effects are incredible.
It's such a massive creation of world and such a artistic presentation of an action film done on another level.
Right.
The story is supremely well done. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing... Like, I think the tales of female empowerment are just riddled throughout the film, but they don't preach about it. They don't hit you over the head about it.
Right, right.
Characters become different characters as the story progresses. Mm. You know, there's like storyline threads that evolve and mutate and become more interesting and unique.
Yeah.
And just, but the very, and then it never deviates from its breakneck pace. You know,
it's unrelenting.
Yeah. It maintains it masterfully. So, and just in terms of, you know, being a well-crafted, well-executed film, it succeeds on those levels. And then the story, you know, seems easy on the front, but is tremendously layered as you as you watch the movie progress. Mm-hmm. I think it's a real accomplishment of vision and filmmaking and storytelling, and I think it should definitively win, but it won't.
I have to agree with you. There's our discussion of the first four. If you thought we weren't going to get enthusiastic about any of these, you were wrong. After a short musical break, we'll be back to discuss the next four. To discuss the final four nominees for Best Picture for the 2016 Oscars. Next up is The Martian, starring Matt Damon, directed again by a stalwart of the industry, Ridley Scott, who's been around for decades, as has George Miller, who we discussed with Mad Max. So The Martian is a tale just basically of an astronaut who's on an exploratory mission on the planet of Mars, who's stranded there in unfortunate circumstances, left for dead. His crewmates thought he had died. And it's just a tale of survival. It's very much like Castaway, but on the planet of Mars, right? In its own way.
Yeah.
And but with a lot of cool technology, and Matt Damon playing this very funny and astute scientist who's able to come up with cool solutions for the different problems he faces. And I saw this one as well, and I also thought this was a great movie. The only thing that lessens my feeling about it is a lot of hammy action movie dialogue.
Yeah.
I just feel like, you know, okay, a NASA scientist would not say that.
Yeah.
You know, I can accept that the crew would have this kind of banter one with one another, but it reminded me a bit of Independence Day, but Independence Day kind of allowed for that cheesiness more so. Whereas I think The Martian is trying to play it serious, but some of the dialogue just left me feeling a bit turned off. However, again, the effects are incredible, and there are only a few moments that took me out of feeling like I was witnessing the Martian landscape. Early on, it took me maybe 5 or 10 minutes to get used to the way the special effects were going to look, but from then on, I felt like, all right, I'm watching him on Mars, and this is a really cool depiction of what it may actually be like.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is a cool depiction of that. I mean, I just felt like it's a story I've heard before. It's a story I've seen before. There's more science involved, which is cool. But the way he solves problems are interesting, and it takes a measured approach to it. Whereas it saves the thrills up for the end. You know, it makes that big last thrilling escape really sort of punch you in the gut.
It's an interesting, the last 5 years or so, it's an interesting space period for these top filmmakers with Gravity, Interstellar, and The Martian.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure NASA is loving it. You know, it keeps their name in the forefront of people's minds and imaginations.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess the thing about it is, you know, I've just seen so many stories about the triumph of the human spirit.
Mm.
And I don't know. It was good. It did that well, but I just felt like it didn't offer anything different or new or unique. You know, I mean, it offered unique things, but not unique enough, not different enough. The filmmaking style was effective at showing where they were at, you know, and presenting that world, but I didn't feel like it was. There was nothing integral about it. There was nothing, I don't know, that made it feel extra special, you know.
Sad for the Martian crew and cast. I really like the cast of this movie.
There
are like half a dozen actors who I love seeing in just about anything.
Donald Glover as
he was really good as the whiz kid scientist. Astrophysicist, I think. Right. Okay, moving forward, The Revenant, directed by Iñárritu. Alejandro Iñárritu. I'm probably not saying it exactly right, but one man of color who's being represented on this, on the on the laurels of this industry. So The Revenant stars Leonardo DiCaprio, and Tom Hardy, who we didn't mention, but he was Max in Mad Max. So nice year for him of achievements here with these two top pictures. A tale of survival in the wilderness in 1800s United States, 1800s America, battling the elements, trying to survive.
Yeah.
That's essentially it. And I know there are a lot of rather gory sequences and just incredible depictions of the actors suffering in the weather and in the elements. And I'm really looking forward to this, seeing this movie. I've tried to avoid, you know, spoilers on certain things. I know certain things happen. There's a battle with a bear. I know he eats some kind of a liver or something. Yeah. You know, I know there's certain stuff. I'm really looking forward to seeing this one. My mom watched it. She said she really enjoyed it. You know, so tell me your opinion on The Revenant.
You know, I think it's executed well, and it's presented in the same sort of harrowing manner that Iñárritu made or created in Birdman. You know, that same sort of first person style shot, you know, sort of in this shaky cam, like, you know, very personal style. And I think it was a very difficult film, but ultimately I feel like the biggest thing you can champion about this film is the difficulty with which they shot it. Like as a story itself, it's a rather simplistic story, you know, about getting revenge against, you know, your foes and fighting the idea of, and then, like, and it takes a sincere approach to it, you know. It doesn't, like, be like, oh, this guy's like a superhero and he can do everything. He really goes through the paces and just endures, you know, because he's trying to seek out his peace of mind.
Right.
And I think it's good at that. It does that, and it has moments of lightness and sincerity and human and wonder. I think it executes wonder really well, and with the brutality, there's also wonder. Mm-hmm. So artistically, aesthetically, it looks fantastic, but story-wise, I just didn't feel like supremely drawn in. You know, I believed his tale. I believed his passion, his you know, his quest. But I don't know. It's a familiar quest. It's not stated in a different way. It's just shown in a different way.
Well, you got to admire his ambition. He just won the best picture, was it last year for Birdman?
Yeah, he won
All right, and he's back with his most ambitious project ever.
And this is the front runner.
I believe so. I believe you're right. I love that this dude is not backing down, you know? Oh my God, dude, the ambition is crazy.
Yeah.
And even just to, as a director, say, yeah, we're going to make the actors do that. Yeah, no, they need to do that.
I
think that's pretty awesome. And to get talents of that stature with Hardy and DiCaprio to be on board, that tells you this dude's vision is exceptional.
Yeah.
And so, but it maybe didn't connect with you quite as much. I'm interested to watch it in a month or whatever when it comes out on DVD, and then maybe we'll talk then. Next up is Room, starring Brie Larson, wherein she is the mother of a young child who are being held captive inside a room of a house. And it's just a movie that just shows their everyday life and how they try to get by despite the hardship and the circumstances that are less than pleasant.
Yeah. Room, I did enjoy a lot. I think that was it's a really effectively communicated film. What they do is they essentially tell the story of this mom and this child's life, you know, create sort of a mythos about it. And I think that's what ultimately it's effective at, is creating a world for this child and then recreating another world in it, you know, and then pairing it against this mother and this child, how somebody who knows what the world should be like and then another person who has only lived in this world thinks the world should be like, and comparing and contrasting and seeing how those two deal with it is really fascinating and really interesting and unique, and how they sort of cope, you know, because the story is told through their eyes, and how they cope with, you know, the world they're sequestered to and then the world that they have to embrace. You know, it's really fascinating. I thought it was interesting, and I thought it brought a lot to, you know, brought a lot to my investment in it. You know, when they finally have the chance to escape to the outside world, it's so harrowing, and you're on your nails. Like, there's a lot of great moments in all these movies, but I do distinctly remember that, And then another thing too is that the characters aren't too amazing. Like they're not like they're real people. I felt like a distinct sense of real people trying to figure out how to deal with something and not being superhumans or not being super evolved or not being super intelligent. They're just trying to make sense of it of their own accord, and they are supremely flawed. But I think that's a way more realistic depiction of people rather than what you usually see, where you see people with indomitable spirits all the time succeeding over any tragedy. With this film, you really see them learn and adapt and grow, and I think that's good. And I think that's why I really enjoyed The Room.
Nice. So final entry among the Best Picture nominees this year is called Spotlight. It's a tale of the Boston Globe?
Yeah, newspaper. Boston Globe.
Boston Globe journalists who uncover and bring to light the despicable acts of the Catholic Church in Boston, wherein they're covering up the pedophile priests. It's just so disgusting. I hate to even think about it, but that's what the Catholic Church did all over the world.
Yeah.
And it's despicable. And I'm just, ugh, it makes me shudder to even think about how many men just kept on going to new parishes and abusing new boys and girls. And anyway, so tells the story of these hero journalists.
Yep.
And this is the real kind of All the President's Men. It's like a real traditional Oscar bait type movie. I'm not saying that's why they made it. I think it's a worthy subject matter,
it is, and the cast is
exceptional once again.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen this, but tell me your thoughts about Spotlight.
No, I agree. I think it's one of those films that's really traditional, a political thriller that deals with nuance and shifting positions and people trying to make sense of all these covered up stuff. It's sort of similar to Big Short in that sense, where they're trying to make sense of this muddled, murky water that's like sort of been brushed over by powers that be. One thing I like about Spotlight that sort of brings to light is just the fact that the cover-up is just not necessarily blamed on a mysterious other, like a mysterious like man sitting on top of a high castle. it brings it down to the level of everyday people, because you know everyday people sometimes ignore or don't acknowledge the wrong things that are going around them. They just sort of miss it, you know, or they're just too in their own heads about dealing with it. And I think that Spotlight brought that to light. They put a spotlight on these big issues and acknowledged them and brought them forth. And I think that's one thing it does effectively. But on the other hand, I do sort of agree that All the President's Men, and The Big Short and all these films are great, but like I've seen these stories and on a certain level, yes, you can execute them to the point where they evolve and bring out more meaning or more truth, but I don't think that this has reached that point. I don't think there's enough evolving and enough of a different thing about this film that makes it like super super special. Like it tells a good story. It's a good movie. It's a great movie, but is it something that scars you and makes you really sort of
lose a little sleep what it made you think about?
It's a horrible thing, but we sort of know it's a horrible thing. We just have to uncover the mystery around it,
right? Well, perhaps in another year, I mean, you said it's great. Perhaps in another year, it would be the top tier movie that we'd be saying this ought to win, and we hope it will. But perhaps that'll be different this year. So there's our discussion of the top eight, according to whatever the powers that be. And after a short break, we'll be back to discuss which one we think will win. Okay, and before we conclude our Oscars 2016 episode, it's worth mentioning that last year both Sean and I thought that the Best Picture Award ought to be given to the movie Boyhood, Richard Linklater's passion project of a dozen years, which in retrospect, we got wrong, of course, because it was Birdman that won. And maybe we referenced that a little bit with Iñárritu with his triumph last year and coming back this year strong with The Revenant again, showcasing his artistic prowess. So we may be coming back in the near future with a Birdman-related episode because we did skip that year in our highbrow-lowbrow quest, and some more years have piled up, so we actually have some more discussion fodder, but that's for another day. Sean, what will win and what do you think should win? Maybe that's a worthy way to say it. What will win this year, Best Picture?
I think what will win, it seems like it's going to be The Revenant. That's where all signs point to, is The Revenant as the Best Picture winner. There's like a smattering of discussion on any number of films. Like, I've heard people talk about The Big Short even. I've heard people talk about Spotlight. I've heard, pretty much Spotlight and The Big Short are the two.
Maybe there's a dark horse here. Maybe as you and I were so excited about Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a groundswell of support that we don't know about that could put that one above, but it probably not. It seems that The Revenant is the real top choice, and I would have to agree with you that it seems that one will win, and that would be a nice feather in his cap.
Yeah.
I think maybe there's only one director who's had back-to-back Best Picture wins. I think it was, what's that British director, William Wellborn, or anyway, go back into the history and dig into that, you aficionados of these matters that really don't, really are not that important, but we exalt them very much because we love movies.
Yeah.
So, all right, we think The Revenant will win this year.
And what should win? I think it's pretty evident from our discussion. Mm. Well, I mean, from my perspective, I really enjoyed Mad Max. I think that's a really interesting and unique and diverse film. Jesse, you don't have as much of a frame of reference as I do.
I do not, but I do agree that Mad Max really just, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
I haven't had that revelatory an experience in the last couple of years watching a movie, action movie, let's say.
Yeah.
Of that budget and that caliber.
Yeah.
So I thought it was awesome.
Just before we get into those guys, I just wanted to say that this is pretty much the main reason why I support the idea of diversifying the Academy, membership. Because I do feel like a lot of the films were sort of tried and true expected films. And I feel like for a prestige ceremony that really wants to open up the realms of what a great film could be, I think making it more diverse with younger people, with different people of different cultures, we could bring some new interesting films into the fray, especially Tangerine. Tangerine, I think, would have been
But wasn't that last year, though? I mean, it's not even...
I think it was this year.
Okay, I don't know. All right.
I think, but Tangerine would have been interesting. I just want the films that are a part of the Oscars to be, present different things, present different ideologies, and present different approaches to filmmaking. And I think that's what's needed more than anything else, is showing different worlds and different ways to present those worlds.
Sure. Well, and then before we wrap up here, quick discussion. Best Actor seems pretty clear it's going to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, Bryan Cranston, Matt Damon, Fassbender, Eddie Redmayne. I mean, maybe Redmayne could get it for playing the transgender pioneer, Danish girl.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It seems DiCaprio's the guy this year. Yeah. Okay, Best Actress... I think it's going to be Brie Larson for Room. That's what?
Who else is
going to be? Cate Blanchett, Brie Larson, Jennifer Lawrence, Charlotte Rampling, and Saoirse Ronan. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Brie Larson probably.
She's probably going to be the one. Supporting actor. I haven't seen Bridge of Spies, but apparently Mark Rylance was quite good in that. That's what I've been hearing
him.
But so you guess. Yeah. Let's give it to Sly. Let's give it to Sly for Creed, man. his career is coming. It's coming to a close. Well, not a close. Whatever. Yeah. His golden years. He wins a Best Supporting Actor nod. That would be great.
Is Tom Hardy up for it? No.
Tom Hardy is up for it. So maybe he'd get that nod.
Yeah, I can
as
see
well.
Him getting that.
All right. So Best Supporting Actress: Jennifer Jason Leigh, Rooney Mara, Rachel McAdams, Alicia Vikander, and Kate Winslet. I'm hearing some talk about Kate Winslet for this, but Steve Jobs, the movie, was really just fizzled dramatically. I
didn't watch it myself. I don't know what happened with the acclaim for that film.
Seems like everybody likes Rooney Mara a lot in Carol. And that's a bit more of an understated role, but I think that would be cool if she won it, just based on what I've been hearing about that. Then Best Director, well, maybe George Miller for Mad Max would get it. I mean, Adam McKay is up for it. Pretty much all the, you know, except for Spielberg's not on
here. I could see Inarritu just taking it, though.
Yeah, it could be him again. And then let me just briefly chime in on documentary feature, because I really enjoy documentaries. I've seen 3 out of the 5 of these nominees. Amy, the Amy Winehouse movie. Cartel Land was this incredible depiction of the battle, the border battle between drug smugglers coming from Mexico, and then these kind of outlaw people living on the Arizona border on our side, trying to be vigilantes, keeping things from coming over to our side. And then, anyway, dude, that movie was incredible. And then I also watched the Nina Simone documentary, What Happened, Miss Simone, which I liked. It was a bit uneven for me, and I don't feel like I really got to know her life or her story much better, but maybe that was the intention, or maybe it was to tell me that she is unknowable. Anyway, I did like Amy, but it was all found footage. It was all compiled from found footage, and some of that early cell phone footage that they actually put in the movie, just the audio quality of it was miserable. And like that early segment of it when the technology wasn't that great, but they had this footage of Amy Winehouse, so it's kind of priceless in that way. It took me out of the movie because I had such a hard time like understanding the dialogue, and so that the tech decision there was kind of problematic for me as a viewer. If I had to pick best documentary feature, I'd say Cartel Land. That movie blew my mind. It was crazy. As Sean yawns, the Academy says, no more documentary talk. No, just get him off stage.
I'm not as big a fan of documentaries as you are, but I'm just curious as to what else is going on here.
Well, dude, now you're just rambling. Let's get off the mic. There's our discussion of the Academy Award nominees for 2006.
Let me bring up one thing. Animated features, Anomalisa, the Charlie Kaufman nominated film for best animated feature. I think that was a pretty good film, and you guys should check it out.
Dude, there's no way that's better than Inside Out. There's Inside no way. Out. How's Inside Out not on the best picture list? We didn't even get to that. That's the joke, man. Yeah. That's so much better than at least 4 of those movies on the best picture list.
Yeah.
Not to mention they're like, oh, we'll open it up to 10. Well, how do you not put Inside Out on there for best
picture? I do think Inside Out probably should have been there, because Inside Out is actually, you know, a really unique and interesting and
it's a big comeback for Pixar as a brand also. Yeah. You know, they've kind of been on a downturn with their weird sequel choices and all that. But Inside Out, I thought it was stellar. So
it really got into the mind of being young and dealing with your emotions. Sure. I think that was.
Anyway, thank you for tolerating us, you few daring souls who stuck with us. We hope you have a happy February, and we'll be back next year to find out, once again, who was right.
The critics or the masses?